welcome to the CineScare podcast, and I am one of your hosts, Matt Speak.
And I am also one of your hosts, Joe Jans.
And Joe, tonight is sort of normal and abnormal.
Very abnormal.
But we don't have a theme, so we're kind of back to talking about movies that we watched this last week. So True. It's sort of a normal episode, not a themed episode. The last couple were either a guest or we had a theme, and then we did The Shining before that. We did Friday the 13th. We had a guest last week. This is
I'm back to recording in my home.
And you're back. Oh, yeah, you're back
at
home.
Which is another normalcy. Yeah.
Yeah. But there's something very abnormal about tonight, Joe. Do you know what it is?
There's something slightly off-putting about
it
this
It is
episode.
A little off-putting. Yeah.
Something I smell it in the air.
I gained a little weight. I should be off-putting myself. I shouldn't eat so much pudding. Yes. Anyway.
I shouldn't feed you so much pudding.
So tonight, we at CineScare Podcast groundbreaking.
Earth-shattering, groundbreaking.
Yeah.
It's not groundbreaking. It's not like we're the first people to ever do this.
No, but it's the first time we've done it. So
that is true.
It's rocking our world. Yeah. And actually, Joe, I'm noticing for the first time that you've got all the Twilight books behind you.
Those aren't mine. I've never read them. I can't even sit through the movies. Those belong to somebody else.
Well, Joe, I've read all of them and I've seen all the movies. I am a Twilight fan, so.
I could show you all my Stephen King books.
There you go. Beautiful. Oh, I could show you too if my computer twisted that way, but
yeah,
I'm not going to do that right now. Anyway, so tonight, Joe, getting back to serious business, we have decided here at CineScare that we need a little levity on the show, a little added spunk, right?
And Matt and I just weren't spunky enough.
We're not spunky enough. We need a little added adrenaline rush into the show in the form of a super fan. He's a super fan of horror. He's a super fan not just of Friday the 13th, Joe. You don't limit him like this.
He's a super fan of the CineScare podcast.
Well, that's what I'm saying, too, yeah. Right? He's a CineScare super fan, right? And he's a horror super fan, and his name is Mark Piscati. So we've had him now 3 weeks in a row, and we decided, you know what? Let's just make him a permanent member of the show. Now, what is his role, Joe? What's his role on the show?
Couch aficionado.
Ooh, that's
a
new
term. He knows a good couch from sleeping on them.
He does know a good couch. He does.
He's super fan. He's a whipping boy. He's a gopher.
Yeah, that's true. And we are here, and it is our pleasure actually to have Mr. Mark Piscati join the show. Mark, tell us how you feel about this.
Take a bow.
Yeah, I'm taking a bow.
Okay.
Thanks, Joe. Thanks for baptizing me in Drive-In Massacre. Really appreciate it. Really appreciate it, man.
Yeah, it was a precursor. We weren't allowing Mark back on the show until he was fully versed in Drive-In Massacre. And one of the best horror movies to ever hit the silver screen.
It sounds like Mark just wants to dive right in.
I do.
Mark, since you did watch Drive-In Massacre, which was Joe Jans's fault, and
blessing.
What did you think of it?
It was how do I describe this? Just watching the film at first, you could even watch half of the film because it was black until you got to the drive-in screen and all that. It was something that I thought I would never have seen, and I don't think I ever want to see again. But just to be fair, I laughed out loud probably over 20 times with that movie. Joe, how did you even discover this film?
I was going through Amazon Prime one night just looking for I mean, we were kind of touching a lot of the more recent movies, and I don't want to pigeonhole the show into just whatever's, you know, the latest flash in the pan in the horror industry. There's a lot of hidden gems out there, old 60s, 70s movies that are, I don't want to say classics because they were classic. Everybody would know about them, you know, like The Exorcist, stuff like that. But there are hidden gems out there. And I just started looking for those old 70s horror films. And I came across that one. And honestly, I added probably 7 or 8 to my Amazon playlist. And I watched that one first only because I was tired that night. And it was the shortest one. And you should all honestly be thanking me because, and so should the directors of that film, because now we have increased its viewership like tenfold. I guarantee you their residual checks this past 2 months through the roof. They got to be like in the tens of dollars by now.
Yeah. That wasn't for rent, was it? We didn't pay money to watch this.
No, that was like free on Amazon Prime. And I encourage all 6 of our listeners to get on their Amazon Prime accounts and watch that movie.
And it's also on YouTube. It's also on YouTube. You can watch it on YouTube.
Was it really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I swear to God, just to pull back the curtain a bit, I've already been talking to Matt and Mark. This needs to be our first commentary show. I think everyone would enjoy sitting along, watching them film along with us and our witty banter, but and tons of alcohol.
Yeah.
No, I like the idea. I like the idea of doing a little, you know, commentary show, especially on a bad movie like that. I think it could be kind of fun. But that may be something we'll have to do at some point in the future.
Joe, who's your favorite character in that movie? Is it Germ? How do you even pronounce his name? Is it Germy or is it the cops or is it the manager? Because the manager is great.
I will agree. The manager is fantastic. Great. I actually like the manager more than Jeremy. But no, the cops are fantastic.
That's what I was thinking.
The cops are just – it's like their only qualification to get that job was being chubby.
Oh, my gosh. Just watching just like their reactions to it. And to be fair, I believe those guys are the best actors in the film.
And, you know, the writing – the movie – if I remember this correctly, it was written during like a writer's strike and they wrote it like in a weekend and probably like an 8-ball of Coke. And the red herring in that film is just so unbelievably perfect. It's like they spliced in a completely different movie for like 20 minutes. And I'm sitting there watching this thing for the first time. Like, did I accidentally hit the remote? Did I flip the channel?
I mean, I think we talked about last time is they spent a whole lot of their time just interviewing imbeciles, you know. There really wasn't, and I don't know exactly what information they gained from any of those interviews either.
I think it was only because they had to like to classify as a feature film and has to be like at least 88 minutes.
Yeah, well, yeah. Exactly, because there's like one scene where I think it's like 2 minutes long of a car trying to park in the drive-in. It's almost two minutes long, just like literally, and then it crashes into something, glass breaks, and then it goes back and it parks again. I'm like, what the hell am I watching? And
yeah, that raises the stakes when you don't know if someone can park.
and then you're just enticing me to watch this movie again. Now.
The warehouse scene.
This is a dangerous situation.
The warehouse scene. The little girl. Oh my God.
I need a drive-in massacre t-shirt.
Did you really have to kill him?
That warehouse scene came out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere.
No sense with anything.
Yeah.
Okay. So we have spent way too much time talking about drive-in massacre. Not enough. On the show, by the way. We're going to become like the mascot show of drive-in massacre.
It's kind of fantastic.
But I do want to plug one thing. Cinescare Podcast, our new production arm, just won a film festival.
I'd clap for you, but I can't.
Yeah, we won Best Drama in the Hollywood Blood Film Festival for our movie Lockdown. So if you guys haven't seen it, look it up on YouTube.
We'll have to. You'll have to put a link in the liner notes or in the.
Oh yeah, I could do that. I could put that in the notes, and then I think it's. I'll post it again on the CineScare Facebook page. So
honestly,
go there
It was an honor to just be nominated.
Yeah. Well, Joe, it had to be an honor just to be nominated for you because you did absolutely no work on it, but you got executive producer.
I got
credit.
My first executive producer credit and my first executive producer win. So I'm betting 1,000.
Yeah.
And it's, it's my tutelage that threw that movie into the stratosphere and helped get the award.
We were thinking of you as we were making it, Joe.
Thinking of you as I was accepting the award.
It's not too bad, for a movie to win, a film festival like that when really we were just messing around with my new camera. So not too shabby. All right.
You made it look easy.
Yeah. So let's move on to what we watched this week. I want to start off. I watched on Shudder, which again is a streaming service of horror movies curated by AMC. So I highly recommend everyone out there to get a subscription to Shudder. It's fantastic. For $4.99 or $5.99 a month, you get access to so many horror movies, great, great horror movies. And I mean, it's the cost of basically one rental. You get a month of just unlimited horror movies, practically.
Yeah, I'm really excited about the Creepshow series, actually.
Have you watched that yet?
I haven't. And Creepshow is like in my top 50 favorite movies of all time. So I'm really excited about this series. Is it really good?
And if you are a movie that makes it into Superfan Mark's top 50, you're doing well. You're doing well. Well, I haven't watched the second season. This is season number 2 that's just come out. I think there's 1 or 2 episodes have come out. But I watched the first season and I really liked it. And what I love about it is that they basically do all or almost all, if not all, practical effects. I don't think there's any CGI. So they have people, if I'm not mistaken, Tom Savini has done stuff on there and a lot of other up and coming makeup artists and stuff. So it's kind of a throwback. The first season was hit and miss. There were some, I thought some great.
Well, sure. It's like Tales, Tales from the Crypt and all that. You're going to have really good ones. And
yeah.
How many episodes is it?
Also, I think if I'm not mistaken, the first season was 6 episodes, I think, something like that.
Long are they?
Yeah, but each episode, I think, is an hour, and there's 3 parts in each episode.
Nice.
So
nice. Yeah.
I just got a subscription to Nickelodeon Kids, and there's not as many horror films on there as I was hoping, but, maybe they'll bring back You Can't Do That on Television.
Oh, you got the Twilight series behind you, and now you're subscribing to
Nick Kids.
And you don't even have children. You don't have young children in the house anymore.
No, I've been taking a lot of painkillers.
Oh, okay.
This is going to be interesting.
So, but Shudder, one of the things they also have is right now is a Val Luden festival going on. And he was a producer and had a lot of B movies in the 40s that came out. And so I watched a couple of his films. The first one I know you had watched, Joe, and you didn't care for it, but I kind of liked it, and that was Cat People. I kind of enjoyed it. I thought there's this legend of these sort of werecat people who took over a small village in, I think it was Romania, is where the girl's from, or something like that.
Yeah, I believe so.
And so it's starring Simone Simon, who is sort of a Betty Page-esque looking woman. And she falls in love with this guy and they get married. But little does he know that she seems to have this werecat thing. going on, and it obviously starts to cause problems in their relationship. She becomes jealous of this woman that her husband works with, who is really in love with him, and he kind of has feelings for her, and their relationship kind of gets stretched a little bit. It's definitely slow paced, but a lot of movies from that time period are kind of slow paced. But I enjoyed it. I thought it was pretty good, and I liked the look of it. I liked the cinematography. I thought it was pretty well directed. So I know you hated it, but I really enjoyed it.
Well, I didn't hate it. Excellent use of shadow.
Yeah,
I'll give him that. Yeah. How long do you think that marriage or that courtship was going on for?
Well, it seemed like 2 seconds.
Well, yeah, it was. It was
I think there were some jumps in time that didn't get signaled. You know what I mean?
They just sort of skimmed over what I'm guessing is at least a 2-year period.
Yeah.
In that entire 2-year period, they don't kiss, they don't touch, they don't hold hands, they don't.
Yeah, the marriage was never consummated.
Nothing. Yeah.
Well, I think the reason for that is that audiences might not have accepted the idea of the divorce and then him falling in love with the woman he works with or whatever.
Yeah.
If that had been consummated. So the idea that the marriage had never been consummated might have made it more palatable for audiences.
That makes it okay. Yeah.
Yeah, made it okay.
I actually thought that you were talking about that one movie that was released in the 80s. I thought the movie was called Cat People. Was it?
It's a remake.
Oh, it's a remake of that movie.
Yeah.
Did you see the remake of it?
Yeah, years ago. I do intend to, I was going to watch it, but it's not available anywhere. I mean, it might be available for rent, but I remembered not it caring was, for it too much, so I didn't want to pay.
Yeah,
for it.
Yeah. It wasn't that great and all that. I did enjoy watching it. It was on HBO, I think, last year for a while. And I just remember like going to the movie theater and seeing, you know, Cat People, and I was like, ooh, you know, that looks a little sinister. Really sexy movie, let me tell you. I mean, there's nudity nonstop and all that kind of stuff, but it was actually it wasn't too bad.
Yeah. And then the other one that I watched that was a Val Lewton movie was I Walked with a Zombie. And this was directed by the same guy, Jacques Tourneur. And this one I actually liked a lot more. Basically, this woman goes to an island. She's a nurse, and she is going to take care of this woman who seems to be almost like in a coma. And so she goes there, and sure enough, the woman is basically in a coma, and she finds her like walking around in the middle of the night, and it's kind of creepy. And then there's voodoo on the island. But for the time period, it actually treats the racial stereotypes in a way that at least for that time period was semi-progressive. Obviously it's got, you know, African-American actors and characters. And of course, they're all involved in voodoo, which you know, is a bit of a stereotype or whatever, but I mean, for the story, it works. And the characters aren't just treated as, you know, window dressing. They actually have, you know, for the time period, pretty sizable parts for the movie. But it's not great. It's another one, heavy on atmosphere, and heavy on the look, the black and white, a lot of shadows. It's very similar to Cat People in that way, but I do think it's a better movie than Cat People. So how about you, Joe? What's the first thing you want to talk about?
First movie I watched, also on Shudder, was a documentary called Leap of Faith, William Friedkin on The Exorcist. I watched this, I don't want to say by accident, but I went into it thinking I was going to get something different than what I got. This was a 90-minute Steadicam pointed directly at William Friedkin, who's sitting in a chair and does not move, talking about how he basically, while making The Exorcist, could do no wrong, almost as if his hand was forced by God for lack of a better term. Every decision that he made was just these serendipitous happenstance, and everything worked out perfectly. And he, you know, went with his gut and trusted his instincts and, you know, that whole nine yards. But it was really just 90 minutes of William Friedkin showing off how cultured he is and comparing himself to Stanley Kubrick. I did like the insights that he had to do, that he finally touched on about the movie. But what I went in trying to find was more of a, you know, behind the scenes of how did they make The Exorcist and what are all the fun stories about, you know, there were like 9 people that died during the filming of The Exorcist, and it's just got all this creepy lore behind it. And he skipped over all of it. So I'm going to combine 2 of these into one. There was another documentary that I found. I used to have an old VHS copy of The Exorcist when it was re-released for the 25th anniversary. And on that, there was a different documentary called The Fear of God that had all the actual good facts, very entertaining documentary about the making of it. And that's where you find out, you know, about the 9 people that died and the accidents that happened behind the scenes and whatnot. And much, much more in-depth, much more entertaining documentary on The Exorcist. And that one you can actually find on YouTube, and it's free. You don't have to buy the old VHS copies anymore. So, like I said, started off watching Leap of Faith, but finished up watching The Fear of God, much, much better documentary. I'd give The Fear of God like 3.5-4 stars. The Leap of Faith one, I'd skip it.
All right. Well, Mark, what do you have?
So the review I have is the movie The Car. It's rated PG and made in 1977 with James Brolin and Ronnie Cox.
I remember this
and,
one.
And the premise is it's a small desert town, and it's terrorized by a powerful, seemingly possessed 1971 Lincoln Continental Mark III Black Coupe. And it's basically if Jaws and Duel, the movie Duel that Steven Spielberg did, had a baby. And there's some great kills in it, just people getting run over like left and right. They have a parade scene where they have all these students on this horse track, and they have a sheriff up in the tower, you know, looking for not the shark, but a car. And car comes in, starts running over, you know, people and all that kind of stuff. People running into a cemetery. The car won't go into the cemetery because it's obviously possessed. And there's a huge banter between the sheriff's girlfriend going, "Oh, is that all you could do is just rev up a car and honk the horn and all that kind of stuff?" And there's some really, you know, great kills. I really enjoyed it. Check it out. If you like Duel, you'll definitely like this movie.
Awesome.
Congratulations, Mark, on your first official CineScare review.
Oh, yeah, very nice.
Yes.
Yeah, I remember The Car. It was a TV movie when it came out, and I do remember it. I think the opening credits are just the car running along the road and it's being shot from the distance or something like that. I just remember that for some reason. I don't really remember.
Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. That was like my car movie.
That was
what's really weird about this movie, because it came out before The Shining, but the intro for the music is literally the same music for The Shining, for the intro of The Shining.
Interesting.
And I looked it up, and it's not the same composer or anything, but it's the dun 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 dun. Dun. I was like, that's The Shining, and I looked it up, and it's almost like, you know, note for note. And I found that really fascinating because it came out before The Shining.
Huh, interesting. Yeah, it'd be interesting to look that up. Maybe look that up while I'm going and see if it was the same composer or anything. It's not the same. Is that what you said?
No. It's not the same composer. So I just found it really weird. I mean, it's almost note for note.
Huh.
And it's like, what, like 3 years before the signing?
Yeah.
And that's what really stuck with me. I was like, how did that even like go through? It was really weird.
Yeah. And it was seven years before
it's 16. On Netflix.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. So the next movie I saw was 1932. The Old Dark House. And I think 1932, there's another movie I watched that was from that year. But this was called The Old Dark House, directed by James Whale. All right, here's a little quiz for you guys. What other two monumental horror movies did James Whale direct?
No idea.
No idea.
Oh, people. Frankenstein and Bride of Frankenstein.
Oh.
Never seen it.
Shut up.
Come on.
Okay. So this is basically there's three travelers are actually five travelers, but there are three that we focus on at the beginning. They are traveling out in the remote regions of Wales, and they wind up it becomes too stormy for them to continue, and there's a bridge out, you know, that whole scenario, and they of course make their way up a winding passage to this old creepy house. And this old creepy house is inhabited by this family that is even creepier than the house itself. And it is very atmospheric. It's got great atmosphere. The guy who answers the door is this bearded, weird looking guy played by, not Bela Lugosi, but Boris Karloff. And it also stars Melvin Douglas, Charles Laughton, Lillian Bond. I mean, these are people that were names at the time. And one of them two of them are a couple, and one of them is just this kind of a playboy who's with them, is just, you know, a funny guy, sort of the comic relief. But they come into this house, and then there's another couple of travelers who come in, this guy and this girl who are sort of, it seems to me, almost like friends with benefits, although back in 1932, they couldn't quite say it, you know. But this girl basically just hangs around this guy who's not particularly attractive. And anyway, they all wind up in this house, and there's this weird family that lives there, a couple older siblings, and then there's some weird person locked up in a room up in one of the highest rooms in the castle. And there's a padlock on his door, and they're like, do not open that door or whatever. Well, of course, at some point the door gets opened, and they get basically these five people. They get the Boris Karloff character, who's this weird kind of mentally ill guy who does a lot. He's big and does a lot of work around the house and stuff for the elderly couple. And they get him drunk. And when he gets drunk, he like loses his marbles, and he goes and lets out the creepy guy in the upstairs, and mayhem ensues. It's a really fun movie. I had a blast watching it. I laughed. It had some creepy moments, a really nice atmosphere. And of course, James Whale is one of the great directors of all time, one of the great horror directors of all time. This one really wasn't on my radar at all, except you remember, Joe, that my wife for, I think it was for Valentine's Day, she got me that
yep.
picture of scratch off movies that you've seen. 100, it's 100 horror movies, Mark. Going from all the way back to Silent Times all the way up to 2020 and a movie or so from each of those. And
and it's a scratch off? Like
it's like a scratch off thing where once you've seen the movie, they're all in red, covered in like scratch off like you would on a lottery ticket, right?
Right.
And so they're all in red, and when you see the movie, then you scratch it off, and there's like a colored
illustration
of the movie underneath it. And so it's really cool.
Oh, that's brilliant.
So I've taken it upon myself to go through the ones that I haven't seen. So I've seen the vast majority of them, but there were especially a lot of older horror movies that I hadn't seen. So all of these that I've been talking about, the Val Luden movies and then this one, and then one of the movies that I'm going to be talking about, they were all on this poster. And so that's why I've gone back to these old movies this week. So anyway, I do recommend it. It's a lot of fun, and it's very well made, has a great atmosphere, and there's some just crazy stuff that happens. It's called The Old Dark House from 1932.
I'm writing it down right now.
Joe?
excuse me. Pardon me. That's horrible etiquette, clearing my throat into the microphone.
Yeah, especially since you had like 20 minutes to clear your throat.
Yeah. So I'm on much more recent films. I watched one on Shudder, again, of course, from 2018 called Open 24 Hours. It had a lot of potential. I was really starting to get into this. It's about a girl who's dating a serial killer, mass murderer, and she's not too thrilled with what he's been doing and lights him on fire and goes to prison for it. And of course he doesn't die. He goes to a different prison. Well, she ends up getting out and she needs to find a job. And she takes a job at this, I believe it's called Deer Gas Market. It was just a gas station in the middle of nowhere. And she was working midnight shift, graveyard shift. And it had a lot of decent potential. I mean, it's kind of modeled after, like, I Know What You Did Last Summer. The things that bothered me about this movie was it was the lack of continuity and consistency. When I see a character who gets their hand slashed completely open with a knife, the very next scene, if they're crawling on their hands and knees, I expect them to at least wince when that slashed hand hits the ground. Then there were other issues with the makeup where she gets slashed in the arm and it's never seen again throughout the rest of the movie. There should be blood just pooling up in her sleeve somewhere and it's not there. The killer, he's been burnt in half of his face. And I swear to God, there are two scenes where they just did not put makeup on him at all. But for the rest of the movie, half of his face is just completely singed. So, like I said, I was a little disappointed. It's not a thinker. You're going to just, if you just want to put something on and watch it in the background, this movie's fine. All digs aside, it had some merit. It was worth a watch. I just wouldn't keep my expectations up very high. And again, if you try to get too hung up on the continuity errors, it's going to ruin it for you. But overall, it was just okay.
Well, okay is better than nothing, Joe. That's what I always say.
True. Yeah. I mean, there's no giant oafs getting drunk, letting the weirdos out of the attic, but, you know,
right.
They can't all be 1932.
What was that one again, Cole?
Open 24 Hours.
Open 24 Hours. All right. Yeah. And what year was that again?
2018.
All right.
It was on Shudder.
Nice. How about you, Mark? What's your next one?
So here's another 2018 movie. It's called Family Blood. And it means a little bit to me because my daughter came into the room and asked me what I was doing. I said I was researching a podcast. I said, do you want to watch a horror movie with me? And she said, yeah, sure. I said, great. You picked the movie. And the first movie she picked, she just said, what about Family Blood? I said, done. Click, click. And so this movie is it's a movie that's a vampire movie. Yeah,
all right. Mark, hold on. You're having a whole Mark's having it. Joe, are you frozen or are you just staring at the sky? Okay. You looked literally frozen.
Fact on my phone.
I thought, am I the only one here? Mark's voice is going out of control. You're frozen. That was just you sitting there.
It's my internet. It's my internet.
Dang it, Mark. Superfan, you've got to get better internet.
This is me. This is what you guys signed me up for, you know, and I'm just here to give you laughs.
Well, you've accomplished that.
Well, thank you.
Okay, so we're gonna just assume that that was a good movie, and we'll go.
It wasn't a good movie. It wasn't a good movie.
Okay, then. Okay.
Doesn't matter. I didn't really even catch the name of it. So,
what was the name again?
Family Blood.
Family Blood. Okay.
Family Blood. But
I wish the people at
Family Guy. Yeah.
I wish the people at home could have seen that, because Mark started talking on camera.
I know.
We didn't hear the sound until like 5 seconds later.
Yeah. No.
Okay, so, Family Blood was not a good movie, according to superfan Mark. If you are involved in that production, take it up with him.
It was a very touching story that he told, though.
It was. You guys missed out on something really, really heartwarming. Okay, so my next movie was one called – this one's from 2020, Joe, so it's not on my little board up there, because the only 2020 movie that was on that board was The Invisible Man from last year, which I think Vincent DeSanti last week called it The Invisible Woman, if I'm not mistaken. But at any rate, at one point I think he just misspoke. Which a super fan should know.
Well, you're
but anyway.
Invisible Woman.
Okay, so it's called Come True, directed by Anthony Scott Burns. Basically, a high school student, Sarah, is at her lowest point when she runs away from home and finds herself with no one to rely on and struggling with recurring nightmares. And so basically, it starts out, this girl is we don't know what the situation is, but for some reason she is no longer living at home. She's obviously had some problem with her mom. And so this, whatever problem is that she had with her mom, we don't know what it is, but she's living homeless. Basically, we see the first scene. She wakes up, she's sleeping in a sleeping bag on a sled, or on, I'm sorry, on a slide, like in a park, you know, a children's playground. She rides her bike home and waits for her mom to leave. So she go in, take a shower, change her clothes. So she is also at the same time having these nightmares where basically she's moving through a bunch of really weird rooms until she finds herself going into this giant hall where there's this dark figure, of a naked man, but I mean, you don't really see anything, but it's just this dark figure of a hairless man in kind of, you know, bent over and very dark and evil looking, and with these glowing eyes, right? So she has these nightmares. So she hears about this program where they will start studying people's sleep patterns, especially dreaming sleep patterns. So she signs up for it. She goes to this place. They hook her up to all this machinery, and they start studying her dreams. And she comes to find out they're not just studying her dreams. They found a way to record her dreams, to record images from her brain and the images of what she's seeing. It goes on from there. It's a little too complex for me to describe, but you're never really sure what the dream world is, what the waking world is. It's pretty intense. I thought actually it gave me an idea. It would have been a really neat way to do like either a reboot or origin story of Freddy Krueger, or some kind of way of bringing back Freddy Krueger in a way. It don't get me wrong. It does not go in the Nightmare on Elm Street realm. It's not anything like those movies. But there was something about it that just made me think, man, this would be a great way of bringing Freddy back, you know, doing something like this. Like Freddy's trapped in some room, you know, or whatever. And this sleep study goes to bring him back. Anyway, I'm not going to talk about a movie that hasn't been made. I guess I'll talk about this one, but it's called Come True. It's on, if I'm not mistaken, I believe it's on Shudder. I'm sorry. I rented it on Amazon Prime. It's for rent. It's a newish movie. It came out in 2020, but I think it was just released on streaming recently. So good movie. I wouldn't say it was scary or anything, but it was interesting, and it was kind of had that sort of dream logic to it, you know, where you're not quite sure what's real and everything is just a little ambiguous. The ending is controversial. I'll say that much. Some people really enjoy it. I didn't mind it. Some people absolutely hate the ending. So it's worth checking out, though, just to see what you might think of it. That is, again, Come True.
Come True.
Joe?
Hey, Matt, if I said the movies Wag the Dog and Bugsy and Rain Man, you would think of Barry Levinson, right?
Yes.
Of course you would.
Yeah.
So I saw another one of Barry Levinson's lesser-known films, the 2012 found footage film called The Bay. And this was on Shudder. It's been on a couple of other things too, and it's got this really, I guess, creepy movie image as you're flipping through all the different menus. It's just like an X-ray of a front of a skull, and it's green on a black background. Anyway, it's just always stuck in my head as one of those movies. Like, I should probably watch that. See what that is one of these times. So I finally got around to watching it. And I didn't realize it was a found footage film when I started it, because I really don't care for found footage films. I, like Matt, agree that there's always that difficulty of how do they get around it actually becoming a movie with this found footage. They don't do too bad with that. I was able to get past all of that. This movie, oddly enough, Barry Levinson was asked to do a documentary about the Chesapeake Bay. So what he ended up doing for research is he watched another documentary about the Chesapeake Bay and the lack of fish in the bay. And he watched that and he's like, this is a terrible idea. Nobody's going to watch that. I'm going to make something different. So he's making a, I guess, for lack of a better term, documentary found footage film about these chicken farmers that are like industrial chicken farmers that are, they're consuming all the town's resources, and they're dumping piles of chicken excrement into the bay year after year, thousands of tons of it. And it starts infecting the fish, and it's affecting the water table, and people are drinking this and eating it and bathing in it. And then all of a sudden there are these parasitic creatures that are coming out of the fish, infecting the people. People are running around the town all of a sudden getting blisters and skins falling off of them and whatnot. And this is all taking place during, I believe it was like a 4th of July weekend type of thing. And so you're getting this footage from the aspect of a local newswoman who's out with her cameraman on her very first assignment. So that's how they've gotten around. That's where we got all the footage to put this together. And then, of course, at the end, you find out the government, you know, sort of squashed the production of this news footage, and she's, you know, underground with her, you know, camera guy, and they've managed to clip this all together. There's lots of wonderful special effects and lots of wonderful makeup in this. It's honestly, I was most impressed with the background characters, the quote unquote non-actors in this film. They did a really decent job of selling just how painful and shocked and surprised their makeup became. You know, they were believable when they like, oh my, there's this scene where there's this older lady just like interrupted a parade, walking up and down the street going, where's my husband? Where's my husband? Somebody's got to take me to the hospital. It was very realistic. And the makeup that they had on her wasn't over the top. It was very simplistic, but it was at least visually painful to watch. That being said, some of the actors, like the, you know, I looked through IMDb to see who's the real actors in this film, and those are the ones that I could have really done without. You know, it's like they were trying to act, and that really took me out of it. But in general, if you're interested in a found footage film, you could do a lot worse. This wasn't too bad. So this is 2012's The Bay.
I actually was going to watch that, and I didn't. So I'm definitely going to watch that now, because I actually do like found footage. I mean, some of it is really trope and all that, and like cliche. I really enjoyed like Paranormal Activity and some other films that are like found footage. Like Blair Witch, you know, started the whole thing. But yeah, I'm definitely going to watch that one now.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you, Mark. I like found footage, and actually of the movies that actually kind of scare me, it's usually the found footage movies that do it for me. Like that movie, I don't know if you've seen Host yet, that yes. came out last year. Like, that movie was super creepy.
So good.
And Paranormal Activity, and some of those, I mean, they when they're done right, those are some of, I think, some of the scariest movies.
Yeah, but, especially Wreck. I mean, phew. You guys seen Wreck, right?
Yeah, I saw Wreck. I liked Wreck. That one, I didn't think it was that scary, but I did like it a lot. I haven't seen the whole series. I want to watch the others because I heard that a couple of
some are
the,
some are really good, man.
Some are not bad. Yeah.
Yeah.
Joe, actually, I did watch a found footage movie myself from 2018, no less, called The Fear Footage. Directed by Ricky Umberger. Now, this thing is very low budget. Don't come expecting a whole lot of great effects. There are some makeup effects in there, and they look like makeup effects. but it's not bad. I gave it 3 chainsaw blades, or whatever it is, out of 5, on my Letterboxd. 3 stars on Letterboxd.
3 cuts. I think it's the cut. We're supposed to say cut.
Yeah, thank you, Superfan. It was
Rusty Steak Knives.
Rusty Steak Knives.
Yeah,
3 cuts. I liked it. I thought it was pretty good. I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time talking about it because it's a found footage, but it's kind of interesting because it's a found footage movie, but it's also an anthology. So it starts out a cop. In fact, I can kind of read you the premise. On April 19th, 2016, Deputy Leo Cole vanished. The next morning, his body camera was found. That's a pretty good opening, right?
Sure.
Or at least, you know, lead in. But believe me, it only goes downhill from there. No, I'm just kidding. But actually what happens is he goes to this house and starts looking around, and we're seeing everything from his body cam footage. So it's sort of like a first person situation, like a first person shooter, you know, or what was that movie that game that we used to play, Resident Evil, Joe?
Oh yeah.
It's like that. It's like one of those horror video games where you're seeing it through first person and the character has a flashlight, you know? So there's a lot of effective things you can do with that. It worked pretty well for the most part. But on top of that, what happens is the cop goes into this house and he finds the TV on. Or no, the TV turns on just like automatically to the fuzzy channel or whatever, right? And there's a VHS there with a tape that says something like, do not watch, or something like that, right? And of course, he clicks it on. He's a cop, you know, investigating, you know, a house that he got a call on.
You gotta watch it.
So he watches a video. It didn't really make sense, but so he pops it in, and of course we see the first story then, right? And it's a story of somebody out in the woods holding a camera or whatever. And so a lot
an
of the,
anthology.
It's a found footage anthology.
Boy, they're cramming everything into that, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. And the wraparound story is this cop with his body cam footage, but he's watching these videos on the videotape in the house he's investigating. It's very complicated to explain. You'd catch on if you saw it. But so he pops in the video, he watches the first story, and then he hears some after the first story's over. It goes back to fuzzy, and then he hears something, and we follow him around the house while weird things happen in the house. And then all of a sudden he's like, okay, well, you all better come out. And then he goes back to the TV and pops the camera, pops the video back in, and we watch the next story.
Yeah, I better watch this suspicious videotape here, not take it down to the station and have it examined.
Exactly. Or, you know,
can somebody make me some popcorn?
They got a call. There's a possible murder, and he's going to watch these videos. It's like, maybe they could do that later.
You pop some popcorn. It's like, hey, I got to watch this.
Yeah. So there's 3, I think it's 3 or 4 stories on there, and they're pretty good. They're pretty, I mean, there's some creepy moments. It's if you're in the right mood to be creeped out, and it's a, you know, you don't have anything else to watch, it's definitely worth checking out. That's always a high praise when you, if you don't have anything else to watch, watch this.
But if you're trapped in a house and you think there's somebody lurking in the shadows about ready to kill you and you got nothing better to do, watch this movie, you know?
Yeah, and if you look through Letterboxd, most of the reviews of this are like 3 stars, you know? So that's not bad for Letterboxd because most people...
It's high.
Yeah, 3 stars is a pretty... That's a doable movie. It's a good movie. Entertaining it. How I rate them on mine, I think 3 stars is entertaining, not bad. And so that it's definitely, if you're not a fan of found footage, though, it will stretch your patience with that genre. So it might not be for you. But if you like found footage movies, it's not the best I've seen, but it's a good one. I think it was entertaining enough. Yeah. So that's okay, it. That was 2018, the fear footage.
So my next horror movie I'm going to do is called When Your Internet Goes Out.
So, yeah, exactly. That's our horror movie, Mark.
Yeah,
we're living
right now,
that horror movie.
I'm doing it right now. No,
Joe, are you regretting this decision we made, by the way?
I'm going to get better internet, guys. But I'm going to try to just go really slowly, talk about this movie in a very short term here. Okay, so
Joe, I know you're a more tech savvy guy than me probably, but does talking slow affect bandwidth?
You know, it's all IP and ball bearings nowadays. It really doesn't matter.
It's all right. Analog.
Yeah.
Okay, so this movie is called Into the Grizzly Maze. And so what does James Marsden, Thomas Jane, Billy Bob Thornton, and Scott Glenn all have in common?
Billy Bob Thornton?
They're all in this film?
They're all in this horrible film. It's about two brothers, James Marsden and Thomas Jane. It's in Alaska. James Marsden comes into town to find an old friend that's missing in the forest. Thomas Jane is, of course, we have a sheriff. Scott Glenn is about to be a week from retired sheriff. And it's about this crazy, big, massive hulk of a grizzly bear just killing people. So many tropes, so many horrible dialogue. Two brothers don't get along, so of course you have the fist fight. You have people cutting down trees, you know, like lumberjacks and all that, that in the dark, and it's like a blizzard and they're cutting down trees and grizzly bear, you know, just bites an arm off and all that. It's a really bad movie. You got Billy Bob, who is of course an expert hunter of grizzlies. And it's a really bad film. It's a really bad film. I don't recommend watching it unless if you want to watch a good grizzly, you know, bear movie, watch The Edge with Alec Baldwin and Anthony Hopkins. That's a really good film to watch instead of this movie.
Well, also another good one would be Backcountry. Did you ever see that?
No.
That's a great grizzly attack movie. I really like that one. It's called Backcountry.
Bad News Bears.
And the Bad News Bears, yeah. Yes. All right. Let me see. I've got – where are we at here? Oh, yeah. My next one – actually, this is my last one. I just watched this today – or yesterday and today. I broke it up. Is called Vampyr from 1932. This one was directed by famed director Carl Theodor Dreyer. And
look at Matt just go really deep, like in the early horror films this week, huh?
Yeah, like I said, I'm backtracking through the movies that I hadn't seen on that poster that my wife gave me. So and I'm glad because these are classics. And I have to say, this is hands down an absolute masterpiece of early horror filmmaking. It was set. It's It came out in 1932, so it came out around the time that a lot of these movies were coming out. James Whale is working at this time. Bela Lugosi's Dracula, I believe, came out the year before. I think Bela Lugosi's Dracula came out in 31, if I'm not mistaken. But there's a lot of these movies are coming out, but they're also influenced by German German surrealism, and this is definitely a surrealistic film. It's not a straight vampire movie, although it is about vampires, and it's sort of this guy comes along. And his name is Alan Gray, this traveler. They just call him Traveler Alan Gray. And he arrives in this village and goes to this old castle, old house. And this village has been overrun with basically vampires. And, but he's not sure about it. And he's sort of a Thomas Harker type, if you know Dracula, the Bram Stoker Dracula from, the 90s, I think. Thomas Harker was Keanu Reeves, horribly miscast in that role.
That was great acting. I don't know what you're talking about. That was the best accent I've ever heard in my life.
Oh, I do like Keanu Reeves. I don't think he's a very good actor, but I like him.
He's not a good actor, man.
But I do. He picks good movies, and I do like him as a person from interviews I've seen and that kind of thing. And from what I've heard, he's a super nice guy. However,
I just watched Speed like 3 days ago.
Yeah. However, he picks some movies that were just not right for him at all. He was in Dangerous Liaisons and was horribly cast in that one. And then also, I mean, the same thing. Basically, played this same kind of role in Bram Stoker's Dracula. Well, anyway, in Vampyr, there's a very similar character, a guy traveling. He winds up in this castle where there is this vampire stuff going on. But there are some scenes in this, and I can't say after having seen it that I know exactly what was it was hard to follow, but you know exactly what's going on. And that's all I can say about it. It was very hard to follow because there's this sort of dream logic to it. And there are some things that happen that you're not sure if they really happened or if they happened while the guy was in sort of a trance. And there's this scene where the main character supposedly dies and they put him into a coffin, but he's conscious while he's in the coffin. And he's watching, there's a window above his face in the coffin, and he's watching everything going on around him. And they show it from, they show shots of him from above, just his face looking out the hole. But then they show shots from his perspective of the guy hammering his coffin closed and hit them carrying in a procession for his funeral around town and all this stuff going on overhead. And it was so creepy, so almost disturbing. It was unsettling, I guess is the idea. And there were camera angles and camera movements that I didn't realize they could do back then. There were some just weird camera movements, especially at different scenes. And there was no one style to the movie. There were a bunch of styles. It's a crazy movie. I highly recommend everyone going to watch it. I believe it is on Amazon for rent. I do believe I rented it on Amazon. But it's a masterpiece of horror filmmaking. It's called Vampyr from 1932. It's one that I think every horror aficionado should see.
I'm definitely watching that one.
Yeah. Joe.
Okay, buckle up. My last film was the sequel to the 2016 zombie classic of Train to Busan. I watched Peninsula. This was fantastic. I loved it. This movie takes place, you know, as a continuation story of the Train to Busan. The Korean Peninsula is, you know, now just totally encompassed with these zombie creatures. And I'm going to point out two fast moving zombies, which I'm a huge fan of because it's just ups the game so much more.
Yes, it does.
So there's a rumor that on this island or peninsula, I guess, which is why they named it that, there's supposed to be a moving car or moving truck that contains like millions of dollars of American money in the back. And so this one of the main like bad guy characters assembles this group of guys to go over to the peninsula, try to find the truck with the right license plate that's got all the money in the back, get the money and come back without, of course, disrupting the zombies who really are just attracted to light and sound. So, of course, they're going in over the cover of darkness, trying to find the right one. Magically, they find a couple cars that still work and have the keys in them. They're able to maneuver through the town, and they locate it. But the city is not just inhabited with zombies. There are some regular citizens that are still making their lives there, and the characters are developed enough, just barely enough, that you get a background on who they are and you start to develop a relationship with them. And when I started off at the very beginning of this saying, buckle up, I mean it, because there's this entire driving scene. There's actually a couple driving scenes. There's this little teenager, I believe it's a boy, who's driving I recklessly would be the greatest understatement of the year to save some people, and basically just using his car as a battering ram, traveling through the peninsula, just taking out every zombie you can possibly think of. And they're great scenes. They're filmed so well. This is a very dark filmed movie, but you can see every single detail. One other thing that I really appreciated, because of the fact that they are fast moving zombies, a lot of zombie films, when it's all post-apocalyptic, they inevitably get into some sort of gladiator type thing where you've got, you know, a captured human and they pit him against a zombie. And it's boring. We've seen that tripe, you know, 1,000 times. This one, they get a whole bunch of guys and they put them in with a whole bunch of these fast-moving zombies. And there's a timer on it. So they have to survive for like 2 minutes and then they get to run away. It was just very well done. I loved it. It was a thrilling movie. The most downer of this entire film is it seems like there were like 3 or 4 endings that they could have chosen one and would have been just fine. They really try to tug at the heartstrings a lot towards the end, which, you know, that's really more of a signature ending of a Korean film. You know, I like my movies quick and to the point. You know, they could have ended this a lot sooner, and I still would have been very happy and pleased with the movie. Honestly, this is I enjoyed Peninsula about as much as I did watching Shaun of the Dead for the first time. That's how much I like this movie. So I'm giving this like 4 or 4.5 cuts.
Wow, that's pretty high praise there, Jeff.
And, I haven't seen this movie yet either, so it's on my list too, and
I liked it better than Train to Busan.
Yeah, I love
really?
I
mean,
yeah.
Wow, because Train to Busan was phenomenal. Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Well, we will see, Joe. We will see.
Matt,
and if I'm wrong, I guess I'm getting kicked off the show.
But I'm getting kicked off the show.
Well, yes. Just kidding. We will at least keep you around for tidbits. Joe, Matt, I got something. I do have something for you.
Is it what I think it is?
It is. Actually, Mark, did you have one more or what?
No. Go ahead, because my internet's all messed up. Okay. So,
it is a ghost story, Joe.
Yay.
Actually, it's a series of ghost stories. It's a story of a town. A town that you may be familiar with, Joe, and Mark. Super fan.
Scranton.
Called Crystal Lake, Illinois. No. Not Crystal Lake, New Jersey. Right. Crystal Lake, Illinois. Now, I found these stories because I was going to do them the first week that we had Mark on, where we were talking about Friday the 13th, right? So I was going to do these stories then, but we had such a good thing going, and we had the trivia and all of that that came at the end. There was no point in doing these. And then, of course, last week, same thing. So I thought I would do them this time. There's a few good ones. Obviously, this is not the Crystal Lake from the series, but it's the same name, so what the heck. There's a house there called the Palmer House, Joe, and is the center of ghostly activity, such as the sounds of children stomping on the floor. Now, this week, Joe is not going to be doing the sound effects. I have to do all the editing this week because, unfortunately, Joe hurt his wrist. What's the situation?
Carpal tunnel surgery.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that sounded bad, man. He hurt his wrist.
Yeah. It's not like he fell down a flight of stairs, and right here is where you put that sound effect in. That didn't happen. I just had carpal tunnel surgery.
Okay, so we will see how I do with the sound effects. At any rate, children stomping on the floor, scratching at the door. Joe, I can tell right now that you're very upset that you can't do it this week because there's some.
I am salivating because I missed all this stuff. Yeah.
And crying. Locals report seeing apparitions of children's faces appearing periodically in the windows in the basement. According to hauntedhovel.com, do you frequent hauntedhovel.com?
I've got an annual subscription.
Oh, nice. I like that. The faces of the children have appeared on a select number of photographs. The stories of the hauntings stem from the history of the house, which was built in 1858. Through the years, the house was passed down through the Palmer family and eventually sold. Reportedly, one of its owners ran an orphanage there where he beat and allegedly killed some of the children. It's surprising to me how often. Yeah, I know. These orphanage houses, there were a lot of beatings going on there.
About beating up kids. I don't know that I like this.
Yeah. The fountains at Crystal Lake. A retirement community is the site of several paranormal activities, Joe.
Local legends. People now?
Well, no, I don't think that's happening. Because they're currently retirement homes, Joe.
Oh, okay.
Local legends tell of a disappearing woman wandering the upstairs hallway and reveal accounts of game pieces on a checkerboard spontaneously moving in the recreation room. People have also told of hearing unexplained footsteps and have feelings of being watched. There's no sound effect for the feeling of being watched, Joe, and I'm very upset about that.
I don't think this is a ghost. I think that's crazy Bernice. She's just off her meds and leaving her room.
Could be. Well, Joe, you know things have gotten out of control when the Barnes & Noble is haunted.
What?
Haunted Barnes & Noble.
The Crystal Lake.
Haunted book retailer.
The Crystal Lake Barnes & Noble bookstore was once owned by a woman who died on the land. Her will bequeathed the land to a local church to be used as a school. Locals report seeing an apparition of an old woman in parts of the store, and some employees have reported seeing items moving and book carts wheeling on their own. Now, that one I plan to use as kind of a squeaky cart sound, if there is one.
You will.
You can get it from Ghostbusters.
And then last but not least, there's the Mount Tabor Cemetery. Now it's spelled Thabor, so it could be Thabor, I guess. No list of.
Is it a light Thabor?
I don't know. Light Thabor. Oh, Joe.
Thabor. Thabor.
Oh, that. I don't understand.
Oh, man. Oh. Okay.
Pull it together, people. Pull it together. No list of haunted houses would be complete without mention of at least one cemetery. According to...
This episode is sponsored by Mike Tyson's Punch-Out.
According to the Shadowlands site, visitors to the Mount Tabor Cemetery have reported seeing strange balls of colored light in photographs taken throughout the cemetery. Other reports include sinister-seeming shadows accompanied by green mist surrounding the graveyard. But One great thing about Crystal Lake is they have seasonal JC's haunted houses that are very popular. So anyway, that
awful is, lot of strange ball sightings in Crystal Lake.
Hey, if you see strange blue balls, watch out at Crystal Lake.
Run the other way.
Yes, run the other way.
That's great.
So that's the tale of the hauntings at Crystal Lake, Illinois. I'm not sure where that is in relation to you guys, but I'm assuming it's somewhere. I mean, Illinois is a long state, so.
It's a suburb of Chicago.
Yeah. Oh, is it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty close. It's about like, actually like 38, maybe 37 minutes away from me.
Well, Mark, if you get the opportunity to go there, maybe you could do a live stream from there.
Definitely going to Barnes & Noble.
Yes, yes. Check out the haunted Barnes & Noble.
Right.
All right. Well, I think that we've done it this week. Hopefully next week, Mark's internet will be working a little better.
It will be improved.
Tell the other people in your neighborhood to just get off the internet for a while you do your recording.
Yeah, I do live in a condominium, so yeah, there could be something that has to do with that.
Yeah, tell those people to knock it off.
No just more. Cut their wires.
Yeah, cut their wires. They won't be able to hook up. All right. Well, I think Joe, do you have anything else?
No, I couldn't top the strange balls of Crystal Lake.
That was great.
All right, everyone. Well, thank you all. Thank you, Joe. Thank you, Mr. Superfan Mark. And that's it for this week. Thank you all again for listening. We have had continued growth on this show, and it's all because of you, our listeners. We appreciate you. We are already on pace. Last month was our best month so far. We're on pace to bust that record even. It continues to grow and grow. And so it's all because of you guys. I'm glad you're enjoying it. And please tell your friends and your family and anybody you know who's into horror to listen in, because the show is going places. Next time, I'm not sure if we'll have a theme or not, but we'll see. Joe?
What a great reason to stay tuned.
Yeah, because we might have a theme.
You might have me on. You might not. Who knows?
Yeah.
Yeah. Stay tuned for next time when we see if Mark's internet lasts more than 5 minutes.
That is, I'm on pins and needles about that. Yeah. I really am.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow.
All right, people. Have a great week or 2 weeks or whatever it is, and we will see you next time.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody. Save us, Bear.